Hello and welcome. Sean Delaney here with this week's Inside Education, the podcast for educators who are interested in teaching. I'm a primary teacher myself, and I currently work as a teacher educator. I've authored a book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, which was published by Routledge. You can contact me by emailing insideeducationpodcast@yahoo.com. You can download previous episodes of Inside Education by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab. Because of the midterm break, this week's programme is a bit shorter than recent podcasts, but it's one I think you'll like. Later, I bring you a snippet of research related to the importance of sleep for education. But the main part of this week's podcast features an interview with Jane Shimizu, who has featured on the podcast before. I love having Jane on the podcast because we were in college together in the 1980s, and she is someone who is as enthusiastic about teaching her class today as she was over 30 years ago as a student teacher. She has a particular interest in teaching science, and that's where we begin our conversation, but we move into another area. You'll hear about how she tries to get children interested in science through teaching about space, and about the different kinds of rockets she makes with her class, and how she turns the activity into a learning one for the children that crosses a number of different subjects. Arising from this work, over the midterm break, Jane has been selected to represent Ireland at a science education event in Portugal, which is open to teachers at primary, post-primary and college level from all over Europe, called Science on Stage. So I began our conversation by asking Jane to tell me what Science on Stage is.
Science on Stage is a group of teachers that are teaching science. So it's either primary level or second level or third level. And in Ireland, it's organised by the Institute of Physics. And what the teachers do is European teachers and Canada get together and show best practice. So every second year, they have a big showcase. And this would be not unlike the BT Young Scientist exhibition, except that the teachers are there on their own without their children. So each teacher mans their own stall with some kind of project or experiment or investigation that they do with their students. And the other European teachers go around and have a look at best practice from different countries. So it's very interesting, and the teachers get to showcase something that they're interested in or that they've done with their students, and that they would recommend that other European teachers would do. And then after the exhibition, the teachers are sent to different countries, to whichever country is hosting it every other year. There's a national selection process where the Science on Stage group from your own country will organise the selection of a delegation to send to this showcase.
And how many are going from Ireland this year?
So there's four. There are three secondary school teachers and a primary school teacher.
And you're the primary teacher.
I'm the primary school teacher. There are different categories. So there's sustainability category, or there is early years would be my category. So there are different categories. And you're with other teachers, European teachers, that are in the same category as yourself.
And will you be with the other three Irish teachers on the same booth?
No. No, we each have our own booth. And in fact, I won't be anywhere near them because I will be in the early years category and they're not.
And what exactly will you be showing, and what do people generally show in these exhibitions?
All sorts of things. And in fact, when the Irish delegation come back each year, they make a little booklet of what they have enjoyed most of the other stands, which then they publish and give out to teachers.
And where can teachers get that booklet?
From the Science on Stage Ireland. If you go on the website, they can send them to you. What I'm doing this time is about rockets and projectiles. And what I aim to show other teachers is how to get kids interested in science through space, through a space theme, and specifically through the theme of rockets. But actually, in fact, most of my rockets are not rockets. They're projectiles because they're not fuel-based. So most of them would be technically projectiles rather than rockets. But I do it with my children in school, and they absolutely love it. It's very, very engaging.
And this year, the international event is in Portugal?
Yes, in Cascais in Portugal.
And is it just for European teachers, or is it for teachers all over the world?
It's for European teachers and Canada. I guess the same way that the Eurovision is Europe and Australia. I'm not sure why, but I know the European Space Agency also includes ESA, European Space Agency, includes Canada as well. So there's some kind of connection there.
And what will you be showing them?
So what I'll take with me then is there are about six kinds of projectiles that we make in class, we make mouse ones, we make toilet roll ones, we make air ones, straw ones, and foam projectiles. And I'm going to take those things with me and show other teachers how we make them, how we fly them. And have, say, balloon ones and fizzy ones as well in the background.
What are the mouse ones?
The mouse, you give the children a circle and you ask them to figure out how they can make it into a cone. So they make a cone from a circle, they put on ears and a tail, and then they get an empty 2 litre, 3 litre, 1 litre plastic milk carton. And they sit the mouse on the top of that, and then they just open up their two hands wide and they squash the bottle and the mouse pops off the top.
So will you be showing videos of these, or will you be showing the actual materials, or what will you actually be bringing with you to Portugal?
I'll be bringing the stuff. I'll be bringing our plumbing. It's made out of plumbing components, and it's an actual launcher. And I'll bring a bicycle pump, and I'll bring the foam and the fins and the elastic bands and the duct tape and the scissors and cardboard and things like that. And some of them I'll have them made, and some of them I'll get the teachers that are rotating around to make them themselves, especially the foam projectiles, because they're very, very good and very entertaining, and there's an awful lot of science and maths that you can do with them.
Such as,
so you start off and you make them and you get the children to fly them. We have our own little clinometer that you can make out of a ruler. So then you can choose what the angle of launch is and then have a look at the trajectory. So the children can decide then which angle is best for launching the projectile the furthest. So if you have an angle of 0, it's going to go straight across parallel with the ground. If you have an angle of 90, it's going to go up in the air, straight up in the air. Or 45 then will be the best angle for launch. But the children will discover that because everybody launches the same way.
The best in the sense of it'll go furthest?
First, yeah.
And what about maths?
I mean,
I know there's some maths there.
There's a lot of maths there. There's also I'm in the early years because I'm in a junior school. So an awful lot of our maths for this will involve shapes. What are the names of the 2D shapes? What's the name of the 3D shapes? How do you get 2D shapes to turn into 3D shapes? How do you make a circle turn into a cone? How do you make a rectangle turn into a square, a rectangle turn into a cylinder? How to put them together so that you can make other 3D shapes. So if you've got all these flat pieces of card, then you can yourself can construct a rocket or a projectile out of different 3D shapes that you've made from the 2D shapes. And that actually, it's funny as an adult to think back that the children are not able to do this. But remember, children have to learn. They have to have experience. They have to have the vocabulary. And that it starts in schools. As they get older, you can't believe the children never knew how to do this the same way that adults. It's very hard for them to realise that children have to learn to read or learn how to add basic numbers because it seems such a life skill. But it does start.
It's kind of like the curse of knowledge, that once you know something, it's hard to imagine someone who doesn't know it.
And even with the group that I'm going with, the other delegates are secondary school teachers, and they're blown away by the fact that children don't recognise a circle and don't instinctively know that that can turn into a cone, or a semicircle can turn into a cone. That, you know, that has to be taught as well. So that's a huge part of the maths that will be involved. And then, of course, you know, once you launch the projectiles, you're talking about angles. You're also talking about how do we measure how far the projectile went, because of course, you know, do we use standard measures like rulers and meter sticks and trundle wheels, or do we use non-standard units? And if we do, is it the same person's shoe size, footsteps or strides? And should we use the smallest person in the class or the biggest person in the class? Or is it fair to keep changing which person is striding? You know, there are big issues like that.
And how do you record the findings of the answers to these questions?
They write them down. We take photos, we take videos, and they write them down. And a lot of it is predicting too. And it's really good because it's a skill that children don't have, or they're afraid to use. They're afraid to predict it because it might be wrong. The answer might not be the same as their prediction. And they're not okay with that.
Of course, yeah. And you're teaching second class?
I'm teaching second class.
And do they come up with the questions, or do you plant the questions?
They come up with the questions, but the seed has been planted. So they really do feel it's their own investigations and their own questions. But in fact, the teacher knows which direction this was going to go in. But we don't actually give them the questions. They come up with the questions. And, you know, children of that age are very concerned with fair. Is it fair? And how would we keep it fair? And is it fair if they all have the same size fins, or should we be allowed to change fins? And if we're allowed to change fins, are we also allowed to change angles? Or can we only choose to change one thing and see how it matches up with the control? And these are big questions. And of course, they like them because they like the idea of being fair and a fair test.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And how many lessons would you do on rockets with second class?
So what we do is the very end of September, we make the different ones that we're going to be making in preparation for Space Week. Space Week is the first week of October. So then for Space Week, we have all the bought rockets and projectiles and then the made ones. And what I do with my class then is my class let off a made one and a commercial one. And the commercial ones will be things like the, I consider balloon rockets because I don't have to make them, the balloons and everything are there. I would consider that a commercial thing. So we let off two homemade and one that is not homemade. And we invite in another class to join us. So two classes let off at least two every day for the 5 days. And then later than that, a week or two later, we invite the parents in and we have a big space display day. So my children then will host a table where they will explain about a planet or a projectile. And then we invite in two other classes and the other classes come looking around for 5 minutes. And then we ring a bell and the visiting classes sit down on the floor. And my class, four of my students will get up and they will present something to the visiting parents and visiting students. Or they will launch, say, a straw projectile, a straw rocket. And all the parents in the other classes have a look at that and help us with the countdown and everything. And then they get kicked out and then the next group come in. So over the course of an hour and 15 minutes, we have 10 visiting classes and visiting parents. And then we all go out to the yard outside and we let off the ones that have to be pumped with bicycle pumps. So the big rockets, the water ones and the air ones that have launchers that need to be launched with bicycle pumps. So they're big ones.
And that's kind of the culmination of the work. But say, if we go through the typical lesson, how do you structure a lesson? I mean, and how much time is talking? How much time is recording? How much time is doing with making the rockets and testing?
It depends. You see, when we're actually making them, they're more art lessons. They're art and construction based lessons. But when we're talking about it, then they're more structured lessons. You know, we have to learn all the names of the planets. We have to learn about the planets. We have to do a data chart with our favorite planet and why. We have to do science investigations where we have a look at what happens when an asteroid hits the Earth, because we've got a little sandbox. We cover it over with chocolate powder and then we drop asteroids, different sized balls, and the children look at the size of the crater that's made depending on the height of the drop or the size of the ball. And then we look at the dinosaurs and we put in a few dinosaurs and we drop the asteroids on them and we talk about what could have happened to the end of the what could have happened to cause the end of the dinosaurs. And, you know, the ball or the asteroid hits one dinosaur, but the others are dead too. Now, what made the others die if they weren't actually hit by the asteroid? And all of that kind of thing. And that would be a very oral language-based lesson. So the lessons are all completely different. Some of them are mathematical. Some of them are language-based. Some of them are art-based. Some of them are PE-based, when we're outside and we're actually, you know, running around with these projectiles and letting them off and that. So they're huge variety of different lessons. So each of the structure for each of those lessons will be completely different.
And do you make connections then to the space shuttle or to the actual rocket that went to the moon?
Yes, and Chris Hadfield is a big part of our learning, you know, because we're looking at what life is like for the astronauts and on the space shuttle and how did they get the pieces up there and how long did it take? How far away is it? You know, if the light takes 8 minutes for light to get from the sun, what would happen if the sun stopped shining now? Let's have a look in 8 minutes, because we'd have had light all of that time before it goes completely dark. You know, all of that kind of thing is all connected. And of course, a lot of the children are very engaged, but they have a lot of questions themselves. And of course, the seasons and the moon being a reflector as opposed to being a light source, all of that is all connected.
And what if you can't answer the questions they have?
We look it up. We ask Google, you know, we have kids searches as opposed to just the ordinary Google search, where we can look these things up and we can go and find out. And, you know, we rely on our parent body who help us out as well. Go home, ask your parents too and see what we can find out. It's a very much a collaborative learning where the teacher isn't the expert, that together we're trying to figure out why all of these things are working and, you know, how they're the interconnections and everything. It's a very good way of learning and very enthusiastic way of learning.
You mentioned kids search. What's that?
There are Google searches that are specific for kids and that are toned down. DLTK is a wonderful site, and they have their own search engine for children too that is very children-based. so they don't have to go on the regular Google site. And of course, we have our own website, and what we will do is we have a link page where all of these children search engines are on the first of our links page, so they can go in there and they can hit one of the children's search engines and look it up there.
And if someone wants to find the web page where you have a record of all of this, where can they find it?
If you Google Renmore Junior School, or the address is junior.renmoreschool.com.
And if somebody kind of has thinks this is fascinating, I'd really love to do something like this with my own class, where can they start, or what kind of, is there a source for materials or a source for ideas for these kind of lessons?
Absolutely. The two websites that are our go-to websites are the ESERO website, the European Space Research Education Office, ESERO.ie. And that has a whole lot of classroom resources. If you go to classroom resources, you'll find a whole lot of lesson plans, and they're all space related. And then the Discover Primary Science, DPSM, you go through that. If you look for Discover Primary Science, it will take you to their website, and they have a whole lot of different investigations. And again, if you go to their activity page, you can just click on that, and they will show you space-related ones if that's what you're looking for. And then, of course, Science on Stage.
That's fantastic, Jane. Best of luck at the exhibition. So another area you're working on at the moment, Jane, is a play with your children. Can you tell us about that?
Well, we take part in the Féile Scoldrómaíochta, which is usually Gaeltacht schools and the Gaelscoileanna. They're the real, they're the people who take part most, because the competition, the whole Comórtas, is a scoilga. We take part. We're a Jeish school, an urban Jeish school, and we take part, even though we don't have Irish as our main language base, but we take part, and we do a musical every year, and the children perform, and we take part in the competition, not necessarily going any further than the first round. In fact, usually not going any further than the first round, but that doesn't make any difference, because the children have the same benefit no matter how many rounds you take part in. So it's full scale. We learn the songs, we learn the words, we have our auditions, and we choose the parts, and everybody takes part. We have the smidgew, the makeup, and the buses, and it's an absolute wonderful experience.
And where do you get the script?
Make it up. That's no problem. I had a look at scripts originally and found that they were all too difficult for a Jeish school whose first language for some of the children isn't even English. So I make my own script. That way it can be easy enough, and it can reflect what we're actually learning in Irish.
So, and the music?
The music, I can find backing tracks from other things and just change the lyrics to fit in, or I can use nursery rhymes, or ones like Bodgy and Ilemy, and just change the lyrics to fit in with the tune.
So what is the theme this year?
So the theme this year is a monster, and this monster is terrorizing the village, and the mayor asks for the soldiers to kill the monster, and the soldiers go to kill the monster, and the monster puts the soldiers in jail. And a little boy or girl says, I'll find the monster for you, mammy, because we need the money. And the child goes off and hears the monster crying and saying, I have no friends. Nobody loves me. I scare everybody I see. And this little child makes friends with the monster and goes back to the mayor and says, look, I didn't kill the monster, but the monster's my friend now. The mayor pays the child the money, and they invite the monster to a picnic, and it's all very happy at the end. And the theme of it is, people might look scary, but if you make friends, people can be very good friends. So it's a nice theme.
Like a selfish giant.
Yeah.
And that's on when?
February. Okay. But we've well started. We know our songs and everything already.
And the script is... The children know their lines, do they?
No. So for the month of September, we learn the music. And then the month of November, we read through the script every day. We just read it. We don't make any bones about... if they ask, what does it mean? I explain what it means. But we don't make... The explanation isn't the issue. Because that comes when they're in January, then the parts are given out and we actually start acting it. And then the understanding becomes, it all clicks. They already know the vocabulary because they've heard it so often, even though they didn't know what it meant. And now it all clicks in, and they really make it their own. And if we want to change the script because it's self-written, there's no problem. We can write in extra parts, or if we have, if the main part, if the child that we choose is the child for the part and the words are too hard, we take out the words. It's great. It's very flexible.
And do you keep a record of the scripts that you can use them in the future?
Yeah. There is talk of publishing the scripts, in which case they'll be out there for other teachers to access. They're very easy. It's very simple, and it has to be simple.
I'm sure people would love to have them because, you know, it's hard to get material that's both interesting and at a level in Irish that second class, for example, in a Desh school can work. And
So I mean, I suppose a lot of teachers who are this interested will write their own, I think. But it is nice. It'll be an extra resource if we.
Yeah, but it's just the time that takes, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's very interesting, and it catches the children in my class who are not interested in academics or science or maths, because we do a lot of that already. So this catches another group of children, and hopefully, you know, each child at the end of the year, each child will have had some personal experience that they found incredibly rewarding throughout the school year. It doesn't have to be everything for all children, but hopefully it will catch most of the children.
And if nothing else catches the children, Jane Shimizu's enthusiasm for teaching and learning certainly will. Jane Shimizu teaches second class in Renmore Junior School in Galway. I've put links to the sites Jane mentioned in the show notes for this week's podcast. At this time on the podcast, I occasionally bring you not the 3 R's, but one of the 6 R's. It could be a review, a recommendation, a rant, a rewind of a previous programme, a response to a listener's question, or a research piece. And this week, it's a piece of research related to education. As you know, last weekend we put back our clocks. This is part of daylight savings time, where we try to increase the amount of light available in the morning when children are going to school and people are going to work. And it also means that we lose some light in the evening time, so it gets dark much earlier. But did you know that on Sunday last, when the clocks were put back, the rates of heart attacks plummet on that day? And so does the rate of traffic accidents. And the opposite happens in March. Now, this might be surprising, but there's actually a very good explanation for it. The reason is that we get an hour's extra sleep when we put the clocks back, and that means that fewer people have heart attacks and fewer traffic accidents occur. And when we deprive people around the Northern Hemisphere of an hour's sleep in March, the rates of heart attacks go up the day after the clocks are put forward, and so does the rate of traffic accidents. So this week's research snippet is a reminder of the value of sleep. And sleep has particular relevance for education. And I'm going to talk about 3 ways in which sleep is really important for education. First of all, sleep is essential for improving our memory. Not only are ideas consolidated when we sleep, but our sleep even has a way of prioritizing the memorization of some information over other information. So that information that we are told is more important for us to remember, we actually are more likely to remember that after a night's sleep. Sleep is also essential for acquiring the complex grammatical rules that are necessary when we're learning a language. We're able to abstract them better as a result of sleep. And sleep can help us in performance, such as playing a piece on a musical instrument or typing on a keyboard. The second area in which sleep is important is that it has been estimated that more than 50% of children who are diagnosed with ADHD have a sleep disorder, but they may not know about it. And that is because the effects of a sleep disorder are similar to the symptoms of ADHD. The third area where sleep impacts on education is a broader one. It relates to when schools open. Now, I don't think this is as big a problem in Ireland as it is in the United States. But what we do need to know is that the effect of circadian rhythms in teenagers means that early school opening times are particularly problematic for them, for their health and for their well-being, never mind their learning. This is because teenagers find it more difficult to go to sleep at night. They will fall asleep later at night, but then they need to sleep for longer in the morning. And specifically, the early starting time of schools deprives teenagers of the precious REM, that's the rapid eye movement sleep. And one quote from a researcher, Matthew Walker, is that REM sleep, that's rapid eye movement sleep, is what stands between rationality and insanity. That quote and all of the other information that I've brought you today about sleep comes from a book by Matthew Walker called Why We Sleep. It's published by Penguin Books. And I suppose the message that I want to bring to listeners of the podcast this week is, first of all, that sleep is really, really important. But as well as that, most of us as teachers don't really educate children about the importance of sleep. We talk to them about the dangers of drink or drugs or smoking. We talk about the importance of a healthy diet. But rarely do we talk about the importance of sleep. And this is something that can have a huge impact on children's well-being and on their learning. So in the week that we put back the clocks and we treated ourselves to one night's extra sleep, maybe we can encourage the students in our schools to try and get extra sleep. Anything between 7 and 9 hours of sleep is considered to be optimal. And that's the research message that I want to bring you on this week's podcast.
The source of the research information on this week's research synthesis is Matthew Walker's book, Why We Sleep, and it was published by Penguin Books in 2017. Matthew Walker is a British neuroscientist working in the University of California, Berkeley. And that brings this week's shorter Inside Education podcast to a close. Thanks to my guest, Jane Shimizu. I hope you enjoy the midterm break, and I look forward to having your company again on next week's podcast when it drops on Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave a review of it on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you download your podcasts. Having reviews up there helps more people find out about it. If you've done that already, thank you. It would be great if you could recommend Inside Education to a friend who's interested in teaching. To get in touch with feedback or suggestions, you can write to insideeducationpodcast@yahoo.com. My book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available from all good libraries and online bookstores. Until next time, this is Sean Delaney saying goodbye. Thank you for listening. Thank you.